This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. We're ending the year with entertaining interviews from 2008. Today we're hearing from two stars of the NBC sitcom The Office. We'll feature an interview with Rainn Wilson later in the show. First up, Jenna Fischer, who plays Pam, the alienated and ironic receptionist at the Scranton branch of the paper supply company Dunder Mifflin. Pam is now engaged to the other most alienated and ironic employee in the office, Jim. Jenna Fischer also co-starred in the film comedies Blades of Glory and Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story. Here she is in a scene from this season of The Office. There was a budget surplus, and the employees were divided over how it should be spent, on a new copier or new chairs. Pam sits in an uncomfortable chair all day, so she goes into her boss's office to butter him up and make the case for new chairs. Her boss, Michael, played by Steve Carell, is usually very proud of the things he says and does, and is clueless that he often behaves like a fool.
Yeah.
Michael?
Yeah.
Hey! You got a second?
I do.
Oh, good. Oh, that must have been so fun.
It was fun. We had a good time.
Hey, have I told you you look really nice today?
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, is that a new tie?
No, I got it at TJ Maxx, $4.
That is amazing!
You think that's good? Check out these pants. $9.
What?
$9. The boys' department.
No.
Look at the ass. Check out the ad.
No.
Look at that.
Way.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, so I guess Oscar and Jim were talking your ear off about the new copier, huh?
Yes, they were.
Yeah.
They were.
Here's what I was thinking. Everyone sits on a chair every day.
Mm-hmm.
But not everyone
sits on a copier.
Or even uses the copier every day.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
Very valid.
That's it.
Okay.
All right, see you later.
See ya.
Hot tie guy.
Well.
Steve Carell and Jenna Fischer in a scene from The Office. When I spoke with Fischer in June, she told me how she got the role of Pam.
My very first audition for The Office, I had to sit in a chair. And the producer interviewed me in character. There was no script. He just said, we want you to act like Pam or your idea of Pam, and we're going to interview you like a documentary film crew might. And they asked me a lot of questions about, did I like working at a paper company? How long had I lived in Scranton? How did I feel about being filmed by a documentary crew? And my take on the character of Pam was that she didn't have any media training, so she didn't know how to be a good interview. And also, she didn't care about this interview. And so I gave very short, one-word answers. And I tried very hard not to be funny or clever, because I thought that the comedy would come out of just, you know, the real human reactions to the situation. And it was great. It was great. We clicked quickly, and they liked that take on it.
So, in your one word answers, like, what did you say to the questions you were asked in the audition?
Well, it's funny. The casting director, before I went in, I had known her for a few years, and she had called me in for other jobs, and she gave me some coaching on the phone. What she said was, "Don't come in looking pretty," which, you know, it's completely different from my audition for the promotion that, you know, they said, we need you to look as hot as possible. She said to me, you know, Jenna, I'm always telling you, you know, look really hot. A lot of times when you go in on an audition, they want you to look inappropriately sexy or hot for the role. And I used to get called in to play things like, oh, like a third grade school teacher, but look really hot. And so in this instance, when I went in for The Office, the casting director said to me, she said, please look normal. Don't make yourself all pretty and dare to bore me with your audition. Those were her words, dare to bore me. She said, please do not come in and do a bunch of shtick and try to be funny and clever, because it's not that kind of show. So when I went into the audition, the first question that they asked me in the character of Pam, they said, do you like working as a receptionist? And I said, no. And that was it. I didn't speak any more than that. And And they started laughing, and then they asked me a few more questions. My answers were really nothing. They were just yes and no answers. And I felt like the comedy would come in watching me think about what I wasn't going to say instead of
right.
in what I said.
And that's classic The Office, because, you know, one of the premises of The Office is that there's somewhere between a reality TV show and a documentary being shot in the office. So the characters are always either directly talking to the camera or glancing sideways at the camera while the action's going on, and often giving very pained looks because their boss Michael is behaving so badly. And you have classic pained looks that you give the camera.
Well, my character of Pam is really stuck. I mean, she's a subordinate in this office. And so I think that for her, the only way she can express herself is in the silences. But you can say so much by not saying anything.
So when you're giving one of your pained looks or one of your this is absurd looks to the camera, who's the camera person? Is there an actor behind there that you can kind of like interact with, or is it just like the camera with a camera person?
Well, there's two different scenarios. When we're just shooting the show and it's a scene, the camera operator is this man named Randall Einhorn, and he's our director of photography. And we will look at him, we'll give him the look, or we'll look into the camera at him. And he's become another character or another actor on the show to us. So we do actually act with him, and it's really cute. Whenever Pam smiles at the camera, Randall can't help but smile back. The man, Randall, smiles at you while he's holding the camera. And there are scenes that we've done that have been really touching, and you'll look at Randall and he'll be, you know, sort of teared up. And when we shoot our talking heads, our interview segments, the director of the episode serves as our documentarian for that week. Some of the directors, we have them back again and again and again. And one director we're particularly attached to is Ken Kwapis. He directed our very first episode, and he comes back every year and directs a couple of episodes. And last year he directed the finale, and he's always taken a particular interest in Pam and her journey. So I feel very close to him. And in that moment when Jim burst into the conference room while Pam's giving an interview and he finally asks her out on a date, I turn to the camera, and in the moment that they used, I'm sort of tearing up. And the reason that I teared up was because when I looked back at the camera, I saw Ken Kwapis, and his eyes were full of tears. And he smiled at me and gave me a little wink, like, "That's right, you finally got what you wanted, sweetie." And it just, it was a really powerful moment between me and the director. So it's interesting. There's a lot of acting that happens on the show that is with our crew members or, you know, people. That doesn't normally happen when you're making a movie or a television show.
That's really nice. Now, how were you cast opposite John Krasinski? Did you have to do a scene together before you were both cast to make sure that there was chemistry between you? And for anyone who doesn't watch The Office, I should mention that he's one of the people who works in the office, and you had a long period of flirtation, but, you know, when The Office starts, you're engaged to somebody else, and even though things aren't working out between you two, you still feel like, you know, you're involved in this relationship and you can't get involved with the John Krasinski character of Jim. But eventually, you do get together. So there has to be this chemistry between you. So were you tested out together during the audition?
Yes. When it came down to the end of the audition process, they took 4 Pams and 4 Jims and 4 Dwights and 4 Michaels, and they brought us into a real office, and they filmed us with a camera for 2 days, mixing and matching us. And over the course of that 2 days, I was mixed and matched with John several times. And after the second day, we were walking out of a scene, and he turned to me and he said, "You're my favorite Pam. I hope you get this job." And I smiled really big and I said, "I'm so glad you said that, because you're my favorite Jim. And I don't think anyone could do it except for you." And when they called and told me that I got the job, I said, please tell me that John Krasinski is playing Jim. And they said, he is, and we're so glad to hear you say that, because we thought you two had amazing chemistry, and we're glad you think so, too.
Are you friends off the set?
We are, yeah. It is the strangest thing to have a long-term fictional love interest. It's a type of relationship that is very intimate, and it's very powerful, but it's fictional. I mean, there is a part of me that is Pam, and there's a part of him that is Jim, and that part of me is in love with that part of him. But in real life, we are just friends.
One of the things that happens on The Office often is that you or Jim instigate a joke, and sometimes it's an in-joke just between the two of you. Sometimes it's a larger joke within the whole office. And I want to play one of those classic moments where you instigate the joke. And this is a scene from an episode in which Michael, the Steve Carell character, the boss in the office, your supervisor, he's lost somebody who was a former colleague. The former colleague has died. So he decides to, he decides to gather everybody from the office in a circle and have everybody talk about somebody that they've lost and what it meant to them. And it's an incredibly inappropriate thing to do in the office, of course. And he has like a ball, a grief ball, and he tosses it to the person who he wants to speak next.
Okay, why don't you throw the ball to somebody else?
Nope.
Oh, yes, Stanley, come on. Your turn. You have to go.
I will not.
Okay. I'm going to toss the ball to Pam.
Let's see. I had an aunt that I was really close to. She was this amazing female boxer. Anyway, she was injured in a fight, and she was paralyzed. So you can imagine how upset I was when I found out that she asked her manager to remove her breathing tube so she could die.
Wow. If you want to cry, that's okay.
That's a scene from The Office. My guest is Jenna Fischer, who plays Pam. Do you have a favorite example of one of the times when Michael, the Steve Carell character, came up to your desk and did really bad shtick?
Oh, gosh. Well, my favorite Pam-Michael moment from the entire series happens in season one, actually. He comes up to my desk, and he wads up a piece of paper, and he goes to throw it into the trash can behind me, but instead it hits me in the head. And Pam looks at Michael, and she says, "Please don't throw garbage at me." And I loved that moment because I thought, here's a girl who actually has to say to her boss, "Please don't throw garbage at me." It's like such a known thing, you know? It's just like such a thing that any normal person would know not to do. But I felt like that summed up their entire relationship, that Pam is constantly having to educate Michael on simple human interaction.
Are there any scenes from The Office that were too funny to get through without laughing and you had to keep reshooting them?
Oh, so many. So many. You know what happens is I seem to every year get tickled by a new actor in a way where I cannot do a scene with them. And the first year was Rainn Wilson. You know, Pam and Dwight did not have a lot of interaction. So anytime we did have a scene one-on-one, I just couldn't get through it. Rainn Wilson, he has this weird way that he stands where he pushes his pelvis and his gut sort of out.
Yeah.
And he breathes through his mouth. And so just to have him approach me is funny.
My guest is Jenna Fischer. She plays Pam, the receptionist, on the NBC series The Office. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is actress Jenna Fischer, one of the stars of the NBC sitcom The Office. She plays Pam, the receptionist. Are there experiences that you've drawn on and have passed on to the writers of The Office that they've actually used in the series?
Well, gosh, I remember early on they would ask me a lot of things about my time in an office. And, you know, Angela Kinsey, who plays the accountant, the little prissy accountant on the show, she worked at 1-800-DENTIST. for a long time. And mm-hmm. she and I would go in the writer's room and they would ask us questions about what it was like to work in a phone bank or in an office. And I can't think of a specific story, but one time Angela and I were talking over lunch and she and I came up with the idea of having a Women in the Workplace seminar. And so we went to the writers and we said, we have an idea for a show. We think that Jan should come in and have a Women in the Workplace seminar, and Michael will get jealous and have his own Men in the Workplace seminar, and they'll have these like competing workshops. And the writers said, oh, we love that. That's great. So then what happens? And we said, I don't know. That's all we got. And they did actually end up writing that episode.
So, I'm happy to be here. It's very nice to see all of you. You're all looking well.
Today's a Women in the Workplace thing. Jan's coming in from corporate to talk to all the women about, I don't really know what, but Michael's not allowed in. She said that about 5 times.
Women today, though we have the same options as men, we often face a very different set of obstacles in getting there. So,
hey, what's going on?
Michael,
I thought about it. I just have a few things I want to say.
What are you doing?
Just hear me out. What is more important than quality? Equality. Now, studies show that today's woman, the Ally McBeal woman, as I call her, is at a crossroads.
Michael.
And you have come a long way, baby. But I just want to keep it within
Michael?
Reason. They did this up in
you
Albany.
You are not allowed in.
And they ended up turning the break
session.
Room into a lactation room, which is disgusting.
Now you're really not allowed in this session.
Well, I'm their boss. So
I'm
I
your
feel
boss.
Like anybody want any coffee or anything?
We're fine, Michael. We just need you to leave, please.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Jenna Fischer, and she plays Pam on The Office. Her movies include Blades of Glory and Walk Hard. When you were in Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story, you were dubbed. And Dewey Cox is a movie biography of a fictional singer named Dewey Cox, and it's a parody of films like Walk the Line and Ray. And you play his second wife, a kind of June Carter Cash character. And
yes.
And you sing duets with your husband, who's played by John C. Reilly.
Mm-hmm.
So let me play a clip of your first meeting, you and Dewey Cox, and here it is.
Mr. Cox, I heard you were looking for a new backup singer for your new duet.
You heard right.
I was wondering if you might like to give me a try.
I reckon I might.
I've been singing in my church choir since I was a girl.
I like the sound of that.
Darlene Madison.
Dewey Cox.
Hello, Darlene.
Hello, Mr. Cox.
You ready to sing one?
I'm always ready.
Well, all right. In my dreams, you're blowing me some kisses.
That's one of my favorite things to do.
You and I could go down in history.
That's what I'm praying to do with you.
Let's do it.
That was Jenna Fischer and John C. Reilly in a scene from Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story. Now, the song that we just heard an excerpt of is so funny. It's just like one double entendre after another. Was it hard to just keep a straight face while shooting that?
It really was. That whole movie was fun in that way. I love satirical comedy. One of my favorite movies growing up was Airplane. And I love that, you know, very straight-faced, very earnest, honest readings of these ridiculous lines and in being in these weird situations, but playing it totally, totally straight.
And you're so good at it.
It makes me laugh. That's my sense of humor. So I guess I feel pretty lucky that I've gotten to work on projects that are things I would want to see.
We'll hear more from Jenna Fischer in the second half of the show. She plays Pam, the receptionist, on The Office. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Let's get back to our interview with Jenna Fischer. In the NBC series The Office, she plays Pam, the receptionist. She co-starred in the film comedies Blades of Glory and Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story. Now, I think it was about 3 days after you filmed Walk Hard that you fell down a flight of marble stairs and fractured 4 vertebrae. Do I have that right?
That's right, yeah.
That sounds
4 transverse vertebrae in my back.
Oh, how much pain was that?
You know, I was walking down the set of stairs and I just lost my footing. And as I was falling, I just knew that I was falling farther and longer than was going to be safe. I could just feel it in that moment. And when I hit the stairs, I had this pain that I'd never experienced before. I've never broken a bone before, but the pain was so overwhelming and instantaneous that it made me dizzy and nauseous. And my friend Angela Kinsey from the show found me, and one of the producers from the show, because we were at a work event, and they said, you know, we think you need to go to the hospital. They lifted up my shirt, and I had, in addition to breaking bones, I had cut myself. The impact of the fall had left, you know, had cut my skin, and I was bleeding. And so they called an ambulance, and they took me to the hospital. And I really thought, while I was going to the hospital, I really thought that the doctor was going to x-ray me and all this sort of stuff, and he was going to come back and say, well, miss, you have got a nasty bruise, and you're going to be in some pain. You know, it's maybe like the equivalent of a car accident, some whiplash or something. But he came back and he said, well, I have some good news and bad news. He said, the good news is, you will walk again.
Oh,
there's,
God.
You have no spinal cord damage. And I thought, wow, if they're starting with, that's the good news. Now I'm scared. I was terrified. And I was holding Angela's hand and he said, you have fractured 4 of the transverse vertebrae in your back. And I didn't know what that meant. And I just looked at Angela and we shared this moment, and it was like the most pure sort of moment of like fear that I've ever shared with another person. And I don't remember what the doctor said after that. Eventually a specialist came in and explained that my injury was actually, was, as far as back injuries go, it's the only one that has absolutely no lasting damage. And he said, you'll be walking the next 3 days. You know, you're going to be stiff, but you need to walk every day. And it's very similar to breaking your ribs there. It's very painful, but there's nothing you can do except wait for the bone to heal. And that takes, you know, up to 4 months for bone to be completely healed. So, but you also have to be mobile. So I would have to walk every day, and I was stuck in New York City for 3.5 weeks recuperating.
Wow. Would you tell the story of the time you were auditioning for a singing group that was supposed to be like the Spice Girls?
Yes. Well, when I came to LA, I was really willing to just hustle and do whatever I had to. And, you know, this actually, I'll tell that story, but there's another story that is an untold story. My very first acting job that I got after I moved to Los Angeles, I answered an ad in the back of a newspaper. And it was, I got paid $100, and I was in a sex education video for mental patients upon their release from UCLA Medical Center.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm sure that tape exists somewhere, but I played a girl who was going on a date, and my older sister came in the bathroom and she asked me, did I like this boy? And I said, oh, yes, I really like him. And she said, well, are you bringing protection? And I said, protection? Protection from what? And she said, well, if you decide to become sexually active, you need protection from pregnancy and STDs. And she opens up our bathroom drawer. And in our bathroom drawer is every contraceptive imaginable, including an IUD, which is like has to be implanted by your gynecologist. It's hilarious. And she holds them each up one by one and describes the pros and cons and how they work and if they protect against STDs or just against pregnancy. And I sit and I listen very earnestly and then I say, thanks, sis, and I go off to my date. That was my very first acting job.
That is so great. Did you have to audition for it?
I did. I had to audition. I guess, you know, again, most of that job was listening. So I have some career in being a good listener or something.
So tell the singing group story.
Yes. Well, a friend of mine found a listing in the back of the newspaper that said there were auditions, open call auditions, to try to find the fifth member of an all-girl singing group that was being billed as the International Spice Girls, because the Spice Girls were very big at the time. And my friend was a singer, and she asked me if I would come to the audition with her. And I said, oh, absolutely. And just for fun, I decided to sing as well. I thought, well, I'll audition while I'm there. And I'm not even kidding you, I'm a terrible singer. But for whatever reason, I got the job in the International Spice Girls. I sang "These Boots Are Made for Walkin'" at my audition, the Nancy Sinatra song, because it only has like three notes in it and they're all in the mid-C range, which is about all my voice can handle. And I got a call the next day that I had gotten the part. The producer was very excited. He said he thought I was very wholesome looking and they were going to sell me as a sweet country girl in this. I was going to be, you know, very Americana as part of this International Spice Girls, and we were going to sing on tour, and, you know, was I ready? And he invited me to his apartment for a rehearsal, which is, you know, when you've been out in the business and you meet legitimate producers, you realize that they don't hold auditions or have meetings in their apartments. But I didn't know that. I was new. I was fresh off the bus. But basically, when I got to the producer's apartment, I noticed that there were other girls there, but they were all walking around in lingerie as if they lived there. And he would sort of point upstairs and he'd be like, oh, there's, you know, Svetlana. You know, she's our Russian girl. And I would sort of wave to Svetlana. What I didn't know about the International Spice Girls was that this was a cover for a call girl operation, a high-priced call girl operation. But I was so naive that it took me about 2 weeks to figure it out. My first clue was that every time I went to a quote-unquote rehearsal, the other girls in the group were just sort of lounging around in lingerie in this penthouse apartment. And no one was doing any singing or dancing except me. I was the only one practicing a song. And finally, the producer said to me, okay, you have your first show. He called it a show. And he said, it's on Friday. And it's going to be for a group of traveling Japanese businessmen, which is so cliche. So cliche, but the true. And he said, and, you know, after the show, it would be very nice if you provided these gentlemen with some companionship, and you only have to do as much as you want to do. But some of the girls have found that this is a really wonderful way to make some extra income. And that was when I finally realized.
So what did you say to him?
That this was not a singing group. I actually became sort of frightened because I was in his apartment when he told me this. And so I nodded and I said, oh, okay, that sounds good. That sounds really good. And then I went home and I changed my contact information. You know, I changed my phone numbers, actually, and I just sort of dropped off the face of the planet so that he couldn't reach me or find me again. Because he did not know where I lived. He only had like a beeper number that was in the time of beepers. He had my beeper number, so I got a new beeper. And I had a boyfriend at the time who was furious and very protective.
It's been great to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
Jenna Fischer plays Pam, the receptionist, on The Office. Coming up, we hear from another star of the show, Rainn Wilson. He plays Dwight Schrute, the geeky and authoritarian assistant to the manager. This is Fresh Air. Rainn Wilson is best known for his role on The Office as Dwight Schrute, the power-hungry, authoritarian, and very odd assistant to the regional manager. He played another odd character in 6 Feet Under when he portrayed the intern at the Fisher family's funeral home. This year, Wilson had the starring role in the movie The Rocker. When I spoke with him in July, I asked him to describe his character on The Office.
You know, a normal half-hour sitcom would have the office dweeb, and you'd basically, you know, he'd be there to be a dweeb. You know, he would just be wearing the polyester shirt and saying his dweeby things. But Dwight is so many things. You know what I mean? One of the things that Greg Daniels said to me early on.
And he's the creator of the American version.
Yes,
and
the showrunner of our show, who's insanely brilliant. And all of us on The Office would follow him into battle because he's such a great guy. But Greg said, Dwight has an adolescent love of hierarchies. And to me, that phrase sums it all up. It's kind of all you need to know. And the other thing, so Dwight is a militant dweeb ass kisser. Can you say ass kisser on Fresh Air? All right, good. And and then I love the fact that he's we discover later on that he's a beet farmer, and that makes total sense. Because you ever meet a farmer, they can't quite ever fit in society. They may try as hard as they want. They can play it cool. They can do whatever they want. They can't really fit into city life no matter how much they try. They're just more in tune with the dirt and the tides and the seasons and the wolves than, you know, human interaction.
Well, you know, you mentioned that, you know, Greg Daniels told you that he has this, like, almost childish love of hierarchy. Mm-hmm. And at the beginning of The Office, Dwight is the most loyal lieutenant imaginable to Michael, who's
yes.
the boss of this branch. But then he senses he can have that power. And it looks like Michael's going to leave, and he can become the new Michael. And then, you know, all bets are off. Like, you want that power for yourself.
Yes.
And you just become, like, such the commander as opposed to the lieutenant. Was that a change in character for you when that change happened to Dwight?
No, it wasn't. I think that and they're so canny, the writers on our show, because they're always creating new textures for me to play as Dwight. I mean, this last season was Dwight's heartbreak. You
right,
know,
yes,
with Angela. And that was a whole other side of Dwight that got to come out, you know, in season four, sides of Dwight that no one had ever seen before. And that was what you're referring to is a period of time when Dwight was potentially trying to wrest control of the office from Michael. And I think it was a deadly combination. It wasn't in Dwight's nature to do that. He only did it when encouraged by his little lady Macbeth, Angela. So when Angela, the head accountant, whispered those thoughts of power into his ear, you know, much like Macbeth, Dwight tried to rise to the challenge.
They always blame the woman.
But as Pam on the show said, you know, I have a vacuum cleaner that could also run this office pretty well.
Well, I have to play a clip from The Office. This is a classic scene. It's Take Your Daughter to Work Day, and you're, like, at the head of what's almost like a little classroom. Like, all the daughters are sitting in chairs, and you're in front reading to them and playing your recorder or flutophone.
Recorder.
Recorder.
Yes, part of my music nerd heritage.
And Michael is at the door watching. So here's the scene.
That was Greensleeves, a traditional English ballad about the beheaded Anne Boleyn. And now, a very special treat, a book my grandmother used to read me when I was a kid. This is a very special story. It's called Struwelpeter by Heinrich Hoffmann from 1864. The great tall tailor always comes to little girls that suck their thumbs. Are you listening, Sasha? Right? And ere they dream what he's about, he takes his great sharp scissors out and then cuts their thumbs clean off.
Dwight,
here's
Dwight,
a photo.
What the hell are you reading?
These are cautionary tales for kids. My
yeah,
grandma.
You know what? No. The kids don't want to hear some weirdo book that your Nazi war criminal grandmother gave you.
What's a Nazi?
What's a Nazi?
Nazi was a fascist movement from the 1930s.
Don't talk about Nazis in front of me. You know what? They're going to have nightmares, so why don't you just shut it?
I was going to teach the children how to make corn husk dolls.
Why don't you just leave, okay?
Bye, Mr. Poop.
All right. There goes Mr. Poop. Now, who likes Dane Cook?
I do.
Such a great scene.
Written by the great Mindy Kaling.
Oh, who's also a member of the cast.
Yes.
And that was my guest, Rainn Wilson, in a scene from The Office. Your character, Dwight, is always so intense and so inappropriate,
mm-hmm.
as he was in his choice of readings. You know, you auditioned for the part of Michael, of the boss of the office, right? Before,
yes.
Before getting the part of Dwight. So what was your audition for the part of Michael like? This is the part that Steve Carell plays.
They keep wanting to put it on the DVD of my audition as Michael. I was terrible. It was awful. It was never meant to be. It was just one of those things that I just basically did my Ricky Gervais impersonation because I really didn't know what to do with the character.
And Ricky Gervais played the boss in the original British
version. In the
English
series, yeah. And I knew I was hungering for Dwight, and I knew Dwight was the one that was right in my wheelhouse. I was like, oh, let me at this one. This is – I got to get this guy. And I remember there was some monologue I was doing about how I could drink my own urine. And I was like, oh, I want to say that. I want to say that line so bad. So my Dwight audition, needless to say, was a lot better than my Michael Scott audition.
Now, Jenna Fischer, who plays Pam, the receptionist on the show, was recently on our show.
Horrible woman.
Yes, she was so dull.
Isn't she awful? Yeah.
So I want to play you an excerpt of that interview in which she talked about you. So Here's the excerpt of the interview with Jenna Fischer.
I seem to every year get tickled by a new actor in a way where I cannot do a scene with them. And the first year was Rainn Wilson. You know, Pam and Dwight did not have a lot of interaction. And so anytime we did have a scene one-on-one, I just couldn't get through it. Rainn Wilson, he has this weird way that he stands where he pushes his pelvis and his gut sort of out.
So that's Jenna Fischer talking about you on The Office. So how did you start doing that as Dwight's way of standing? And he also, am I wrong in saying he's often standing a little too close to the person he's talking to?
Yes, he's not so good at interpersonal boundaries, and that includes standing that way. I don't know, you know, it's just like it's just what we do as actors, I think, you know. My haircut for Dwight was very important. It was very important to me that I have the least flattering haircut possible to my head, which I designed specifically. Thank you very much. The calculator wristwatch that I wear brings me no end of pleasure. I am so close to that wristwatch. I don't want anyone to ever touch it. It really reveals his character. And also the fact that he still wears a beeper, which is about 8 years after beepers have been completely discontinued, because probably has some number that someone might still have. But all of these things put together, and then it kind of comes into your body. And I think your job as the actor is to let these impulses flow through you and not stifle them. So if you have, you know, again, he has this love of hierarchies and this love of power. Well, he's going to assert his power with his pelvis, you know, maybe stand inappropriately close to someone. And it's kind of like an alpha male type of thing.
Let's talk about your formative years growing up. You grew up in
Seattle, Washington, for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I've read that you described your parents as hippies. Would that be fair?
Yeah, I think, you know, I say hippies for lack of a better term, but they were more like beatnik bohemians than hippies. Because mm-hmm. you say hippies and people are like, oh, are they tripping all the time, dude? It's like, no, they lived on a houseboat and my dad painted murals and wanted to be an abstract artist. And my mom at the time was actually an actress in like experimental theater in Seattle, and she was painting her chest blue and running around topless doing Bertolt Brecht and stuff. They were kind of in that kind of world. And my mom wanted to name me Thucydides.
No.
After the famous Greek historian. So you could almost be talking to Thucydides Wilson, Terry. But my dad wanted to name me Rainier after Rainier Maria Rilke, the poet. But we lived by Mount Rainier and blah, blah, blah. Somehow or other, I ended up with the name Rain. But yeah, that was the late 60s in Seattle for you.
Were most of your friends' parents bohemians too?
No, we moved out to the burbs, and they were mostly like insurance agents and car salesmen.
So did that make you weird or your family weird by comparison?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was just remembering the other day, like I would bring friends over and I'd be so embarrassed because my dad would have all of his huge oil paintings hung all over the house and he always painted like topless women. It seems to be a theme, doesn't it? There's like a boob theme woven in here. And I would be so embarrassed because my little friends would come over and they'd be like, what's that? I'm like, that's an abstract of a woman's boobs. Abstract oil after de kooning. So
Mr. Thucydides.
Yeah. So we were pretty weird, and I remember friends' parents would come over and try and sell us Amway, and we didn't really have any money or anything like that. My dad also was a struggling science fiction writer. He'd pound away on his little manual typewriter writing kind of potboiler science fiction fantasy novels.
Were they good?
They're pretty good, yeah.
Published?
One of them got published, and I think there's like 11 of them in various shoe boxes around. He's even writing another one called, get this, The Zombies of Gog.
Oh, well, you were in a famous zombie film.
I was. House of 1,000 Corpses. Yes, indeed.
Directed by Rob Zombie.
Indeed, indeed. That was my first lead in a movie. You could say I was discovered by Rob Zombie. So
there's zombies running the family.
I think so. Yeah, zombies and boobs.
My guest is Rainn Wilson. He plays Dwight Schrute on The Office. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to our interview with Rainn Wilson. He plays Dwight Schrute on the NBC comedy series The Office. This year, he starred in the movie The Rocker. You have to do a lot of pratfalls in The Rocker. I mean, there's a lot of stunts and things like that. So physical comedy is, I guess, what I mean to say. Mm-hmm. So where did you learn to do that? Did you learn that kind of stuff in acting school?
Well, I think among all the different kinds of geeks that I was growing up, one of them that hasn't really been explored too much is I was a comedy geek. I was the kid who would find out Monty Python was playing on PBS at like midnight on Sunday, and I would sneak out of bed with my cassette tape recorder, put a 90-minute cassette in and hold it in front of the television and record, because remember, there's no TiVo, there's no DVDs, there's none of that stuff, and record whole Monty Python sketches. And I remember I did the same thing with Singin' in the Rain that was on, and I learned all the songs and the comedy bits from Singin' in the Rain and Marx Brothers movies. And I had a little cassette library in my room of all of these geeky comedy things, and I had them memorized, and I could do whole – I was that annoying guy that would go to the screening of Monty Python and the Holy Grail and recite it word, from beginning to end. So I guess what I'm saying is that I always had a deep love of weird comedy, and physical comedy is part of that, and nothing made me laugh more than Jerry Lewis when I was growing up, and – him walking backwards into a swimming pool, I could just think about it and just chortle and chortle like a little girl.
So I feel now I need to ask you for the entire list of types of nerd or geek that you were when you were young.
Bring it. Yeah. Bring it. How about this?
What's the whole list?
Sample this, Terry Gross.
Yes.
Model United Nations nerd.
Really? You were a member?
International relations nerd. That's that was one of my passions. I loved that. I discovered Model United Nations, and I loved news and history, and you know, I'd read the newspaper when I was young, and oh my God, I would get to go to a school Model United Nations conference and pretend to be the man from Ghana. It's like, I'm going to be from Ghana. What would the guy from Ghana want to do? You know, and we'd pass resolutions, and I was Nicaragua, and I was even the U.S., and I loved being the Arab countries. We would go to the University of Washington to the conferences, you know, over in the local Seattle, all the Model United Nations geeks. I swear there's a good movie in here. And we would hit on the girls, all like eight of them that would be at the entire conference. It was fun, you know, running around pretending to be an Arab nation and sticking it to the U.S. And that was fun.
Okay, so we got U.N. nerd, music nerd, comedy nerd.
Yes.
What else?
Well, we didn't go fully into the music nerd part of things, I don't think, did we?
Well, I happen to know you played bassoon.
Yes, I was a bassoonist.
Which is great. Some people don't even know what a bassoon sounds like. It's a great instrument.
It sounds a little like this. Something like that, I think.
It's a hard instrument, isn't it? Those reeds.
It's really hard. It's a double
reed.
Hard. Yeah. And nothing. It's also a girl repellent. So all you aspiring bassoonists out there, throw down your bassoons and pick up electric guitars.
You have to suck on the reed for a while, right?
That's what she said. Not now. You're on Fresh Air.
Rainn Wilson, it has been so great to talk with you. Thank you so much.
What a pleasure.
I'm a really big fan.
Thanks for having me on the show. Thanks.
Rainn Wilson plays Dwight Schrute in the NBC sitcom The Office. Our interview was recorded last July. You can download podcasts of our show on our website, freshair.npr.org. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Monique Nazareth, Anne-Marie Baldonado, Joan Tuohy-Westman, Sam Brigger, Jonathan Menjivar, John Myers, and John Sheehan. I'm Terry Gross.